Okay, so this week is Chayesara. So most of the parasha Chayesara focuses on Eliezer's journey to find a wife for Yitzchak. However, the name of the parasha is actually the beginning of the parasha. It talks about, actually, Chayesara means the life of Sarah, but it actually focuses on her passing, on her death. And I want to focus on that today. And that is Sarah's passing and the lessons that are learned from the way the Torah describes it. So the Torah calls it, the Torah starts with Vayu Chayesara. And the life of Sarah was 127 years, or the Torah says in 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. And there's a lot of discussion about why it's divided up 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. So Rashi explains that all the years were equally good. Okay, all the years were equally good. Now, the question is, right off the bat, just based on what we see in the Torah, Sarah did not have an easy life. She did not have an easy life. She was childless till the age of 90. She was abducted. Avimelech and Paro, correct, both abducted her. God stopped them. She was miraculously saved. But that could have been a pleasant experience, to say the least. She had to deal with a rebellious servant, Hagar, and the son, and that whole situation, dealing with Hagar and with Yishmael and so on. So, you know, that's just off the bat from the Torah. It seems like she did not have an easy life. So what does it mean that all the years were equal for good? That's a question I'd like to put out there. The second question is that it says, the Torah keeps focusing on this idea of years. Vayu, Chayesara, Mea Shana, Veshivim Shana, or 100 years and 20 years and 7 years, Shnei Chayesar were the years of Sarah. There's a lot of redundancy over there. So again, Rashi talks about that it has 100 years and 20 years and 7 years to compare the different eras of her life. That when she turned, you know, certain things were equal. When she was 100, she was as free of sin as when she was in her decades part of her life, at the age of 20. And when she was 20, her beauty was as great as that of a 7-year-old. Which you're wondering, right? Since when are 7-year-olds beautiful? The answer is, let me give the answer. It's not my discussion today, but the answer is that we in the Western world translate beauty as attractive, okay? As opposed to the beauty, the innocent beauty, right? You know, you look at the trees outside, they're beautiful, right? Hopefully no one identifies as one yet. But you know, it's a beauty that is not tied to the Yetzer Hara, right? It's an innocent beauty. It's an inherent pristine beauty. And so a child has a pristine, innocent beauty, right? You see a child has a pristine, innocent beauty. When a person gets older, that beauty moves into more of the world of desires and so on. So the point is that the beauty that she radiated was not a beauty that tapped into the lower part of a person, but rather to the higher, more intellectual, spiritual part of the person. That is the idea behind it. Okay.
You got a shame of fun.
Okay.
The shame of fun.
Okay, I got your comment. Thank you. Okay, so, but again, the verse ends and says, "Shnei Chaye Sara were the years of the life of Sara." So, why again, that 100 years and 20 years and 7 years were the years of the life of Sarah. So why is it the verse reiterating at the end, were the years of the life of Sarah? Just you told me, and the life of Sarah was 127 years, finished. End the verse. Second of all, why this big focus on the life of Sarah? We're talking about her death. She died. And yet the parsha is called Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah. Wouldn't it make more sense to call it the death of Sarah? Okay, and yet we look at this and say, Chayesara, the life of Sarah. So let's talk about a few different ideas over here and try to put things together. Rashi tells us, again, based on the Medrash, actually I think it's a passage from the Talmud, that when, how did Sarah die? What brought about her death? So Rashi tells us that what happened was after, right, the end of, what's that?
The Akedah.
The Akedah, right. Precisely. At the end of last week's parasha, Avram is tested by God. He's told to bring his son up as an offering upon the altar, upon the Mizbeach, and Hashem at the last second, through an angel, stays his hand, and Yitzchak is saved. He does not die. and Avram and Yitzchak return. Okay, Rashi says that the Satan came and told Sarah that, do you know where Avram went with Yitzchak? No, where'd he go? He went to bring him as an offering. And the shock the shock killed her. Okay, whatever exactly happened, basically the shock of that news killed her. Now, some point out that the language actually used in Rashi is that the Satan told her that he was almost not, offered. And some say that, in fact, what Satan told her was that Abraham had failed the test. And it was that she thought that he had failed the test because he had not actually brought him as an offering. And it was that shock that killed her. But the simple understanding is that she was told that Avram was bringing Yitzchak as an offering, and that shock killed her. So imagine just the scene for a moment. Avram gets back from this great trial that he has just had to go through. And what does he get? He finds that his wife has died as a result of this whole incident. And so one would forgive Avram for perhaps being resentful and for saying to God, is this what I get for my efforts? Here I was put through this very terrible trial and tribulation, and I passed it with flying colors. And as a reward for my efforts, I come back and I find that the news of this event has killed my wife. Is this the reward I get? Okay, so the commentators say 2 points. Number one, that we don't find Avram complaining at all. On the contrary, he has to go to Ephron, who is the original used car salesman, that we find in the Torah. The Mazachela. He offers him, everything. He says, I'll sell you the land, the gravesite for free. I'll sell it to you. I'll give it to you for free. Avram says, thank you very much. I'd like to pay for it. And then he rips him off. He gives him an exorbitant sum of 400 large silver coins. Rashi says he's talking about a very large type of coin. It ends up, I don't remember the number, someone calculated what it will be worth in modern terms. It's an exorbitant price, exorbitant amount of money. So here Avram has to go, after going back from his trial, he has to deal with his wife's sudden passing because of the very event that he had to deal with. Then he has to buy a piece of land in a land that's supposed to be his just to bury his wife. He has to deal with some sleazy guy and a whole nation who are, kind of being very nice to him, at least being very polite, but kind of playing games. And this is what he has to do. And all you see from Avram is his nobility, his elegance, his patience, his forbearance. He doesn't utter a word of complaint. And if you go through the verses, you will see, that element of royalty, of nobility in Avram, that he maintains his etiquette and his calm demeanor at all times. Okay. And so some commentators point out, and they say that this was Sarah's time to die. In other words, sometimes an accident or a tragedy happens and people say, this person, died. If this wouldn't have happened, the person wouldn't have died. Okay. When we look at it through the eyes of how God runs the world, really what we have to say is God decided the person should pass on at this time. Now, yes, perhaps the circumstances were tragic and were unfortunate and so on, but God had decided that this person should pass away at this time. This just happened to be the means that God used to bring it about. And so the commentators say that it says that the life of Sarah was 127 years. That stress on the life of Sarah being 127 years is to tell us this was her lifespan. She was supposed to live until this point. It's not like if this shock wouldn't have happened, she would have lived another, X amount of years, except that this event happened. No, she was supposed to die at this point in time. It so happens to be that God chose this method, this event, as the means for her to pass on. Okay, and so Avraham, the Torah stresses that Vayu Chayesar, the life of Sarah, was 127 years. To bring across this point, that was her given lifespan. That was how long she was supposed to live. Don't think that, or say, well, if this wouldn't have happened, she wouldn't have died. And we could spend our lives always, in a certain sense, second-guessing everything that goes on in our lives. And, well, if I wouldn't have done this X wouldn't have happened. If I wouldn't have done that, Y wouldn't have happened, and so on. Now, if a person makes a poor choice, person does the wrong thing, then you're right, you should kick yourself. Right? But if you took a responsible route, you had a decision to make, or you had to engage in something, and you did the research, and you asked around, and you took a responsible approach, and you made a decision, and it didn't end well, so then a person should not go back and say, if only I would have done that instead. Okay, the attitude should not be that. The attitude should be God runs the world. God told me I have to put in my best effort. As long as I put in my best effort, this is what happened, and that's it. And so Avram's reaction would have been, listen, this was the time for Sarah to go, and this is how Hashem chose to take her. That's fine. But, you know, we don't find him questioning Hashem at all. In fact, some sources actually count this whole situation as one of the tests, as one of the trials that Avram had to go through. Precisely because he could have questioned God. He could have said, God, this is what you do to me. Now I have to deal with my wife's death and with buying a piece of land from this guy and so on. And he didn't ask any questions.
Avram never reacts like that. Through all
correct. You're right.
He never reacts like that.
Well, throughout all of his trials and tribulations, he doesn't. Well, that's why he's a great person.
Wasn't he living in Beersheba, but she was living somewhere else then?
No. He was living with his wife in Beersheba. You know, exactly where he went and where she went after he departed, that I don't know. He didn't tell her where he was going. That's clear. Because, you know, Satan showed up and told her what was going on. Yeah.
Doesn't he cry, though?
Yes, he did cry. Yes. No, because...
I mean, he can't live forever.
Right. So let me address that for a moment. You know, because, again, going back to the Western mindset today is, you know, that when a tragedy happens, so, you know, there's room for complaint. Crying is not indicative of complaining. Crying is a normal reaction when a tragedy occurs. On the contrary, yeah. There are times to cry. There are times to cry. And on the contrary, it's very clear in the Talmud that one is supposed to cry and eulogize and grieve over the loss of a loved one. That's very clear. On the contrary, what?
The commentary to the Chumash.
What?
The commentary to the Chumash says that he cried in private.
Okay. All right. He cried in private. And what's the reason they give for that?
Not to display.
Perhaps. Okay.
It's a private thing. He didn't want it.
Okay. I would have to look into that more, but okay. I appreciate that. Yeah. Maybe because of his position in the world and his nobility and so on, it wasn't appropriate for him to cry in public. But it's very clear, and the point you make for a few days, the Talmud makes it clear that, yes, one is supposed, there is a period of grieving and crying, and then one is supposed to move on gradually. So in our world, we have a 7-day period and a 30-day period and a 1-year period, and that is supposed to be, you know, gradually moving on with life. That is the idea. But there is a period of grieving and of grief. What?
If it was a year, why did it become 11 months?
That's just because of Kaddish. Kaddish is only recited 11 months for a different reason. The reason why a child recites Kaddish apparently for 11 months is because, this is fairly tangential, but I'll address it. It's a good question. A child recites Kaddish apparently for 11 months, not for a full year, because the idea behind Kaddish is to provide what we call an aliyah for the neshama. It's a merit for the soul that the child says Kaddish. There is not a word about the dead in Kaddish at all. All it talks about is how God's name should be made great and the Messiah should come and everyone should know about God in the world. The point is, when a person says Kaddish, it's an announcement to the world that God exists and God is in the world. And by making that announcement, that provides a merit for the soul of the deceased. Okay. And the idea is that in case the soul of the deceased person, lacks merits to get into Gan Eden, into the next world. So the child says Kaddish, or someone, not the child, someone says Kaddish as a merit for the soul to provide extra merits to raise the soul up. Now, the Talmud says that the maximum sentence for a person in Gehenim, in purgatory, okay, in England, in what we call Gehenim, which is more of a cleansing process, okay, for the soul. That's not my discussion today. The maximum sentence for even a very wicked person is 12 months. There are exceptions. The Talmud talks about people who are exceptionally, exceptionally wicked. So don't worry, that neighbor who you really think is horrible. Well, okay. But, you know, there are exceptionally, exceptionally wicked people out there. We can all think of some. Everyone has their own ideas. You know, but on average, even a very wicked person, the maximum sentence is 12 months. If a child were to say Kaddish for 12 months, that's kind of announcing or in giving an indication that my parent is that wicked and they need a full 12-month sentence. So you stop a month early as if to say, you know, my parent is not that bad. Okay. And therefore we stop. Therefore the custom is to stop a month early, but really the full mourning period is 12 months. Okay. So getting back over here,
you know, that's kind of bad news for the parent who really is wicked, huh?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm wondering, let's say the person really, really was wicked. That is Sivya Frieder. Okay. Yeah. But again, you know, a child does have an obligation to honor a parent in general, even if the parent had serious flaws, there might be certain exceptions, and that's not my discussion today. So I don't want to get too far down that rabbit hole right now. Okay. So Avram, I lost my train of thought now. Oh yes. So Avram, he's saying that he cried in private and so on. But there is an idea of grieving. There is a period of mourning. But the Talmud does make clear that one is supposed to move on with their life as well. Okay. So Avram buries Sarah. But again, the point is over here that the life of Sarah was complete. That is on a basic level the idea of why it focuses on the years of Sarah's life. But let's take this a step further. And let's go back to our other question now and take it, you know, a little deeper. What does Rashi mean when he says that all of the years of her life were good, were equally good, if seemingly she had a lot of difficulties in life? Yeah.
One quick question. Was she born and died at the same day?
Yes. Yes, she did. But yeah, Rashi, sure. the Medrash says that the lives of tzaddikim, Hashem makes sure that their lives are full. In other words, that they die in the day that they are born. A perfect circle, which maybe we'll incorporate into what we're going to talk about over here. Yes, the Medrash does say that.
Okay. We don't know our birthday. And we don't know our death date.
There probably are sources that indicate when it was, but I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you. Yeah, the Talmud does discuss when Yitzhak was born, when Avram was born, when Yaakov was born, some of the tribes. But it, as far as I know, it does not talk about when the matriarchs were born. But there are other sources that sometimes deal with when. We do know when Rachel passed away was last week. Her yard site was a few days ago. Okay. So I want to share with you some thoughts that I heard on a class from Rabbi Aaron Lopiansky, who is the Rosh Yeshiva, the Dean of Yeshiva of Greater Washington in the Silver Spring, Maryland area. And if you ever want to hear very, very good classes, you could look him up, ravlopiansky.com. So he expresses the following idea. And he says that when the Torah focuses on years, the idea that they were all good, he says the idea is as follows. The Talmud talks about, this is seemingly out of left field, that we have an idea called an animal that's a trefa. Okay, in modern Jewish parlance, if something is treif, that means it's not kosher, right? But to be exact, the exact term trefa is an animal that has a certain kind of blemish or physical ailment which would not allow it to survive for a year. Okay, and if the animal there's a list of different blemishes or physical ailments or damage to the animal, which if it cannot last a year, these blemishes, if the animal cannot survive a year, so then it is not, even if the animal is a kosher species, but it is not fit for consumption. That is why after they slaughter a cow, they will check the lungs, because if there's any holes in the lungs, so then the animal is a trefa, because a hole in the lung is considered a fatal blemish. So they are allowed to sell it to, yeah, they do sell it to non-Jews. Yeah, they are allowed to sell it to non-Jews. But they say the majority of animals actually do end up being sold to non-kosher meat processors, because most animals today, because we're very stringent, exactly what's considered a whole and so on, most animals end up getting sold, which is one reason why kosher meat is so expensive. There's a lot of other reasons also, but that's one reason. But yeah, they do sell it to a non-kosher slaughterhouse. What's the idea of a year? That it has to survive a year. So the idea is as follows. The word shana, which means a year, also is cognate with the term shinui, which means a change.
Okay.
Shoneh, a change, right? When I once wanted to say that in Hebrew, the word for tooth is shane. Shane. Shane, right? Shinaim, our teeth. And the word for sleep is shena, sleep. And the word for change is shoneh. So I said, because you know, when I was a kid, if your tooth fell out, you put it under the pillow, and then you got some change under your pillow instead the next morning. So it all tied together, huh?
Did your fairy actually came to you?
No, it was my father in the guise of the yeah. So if you put your tooth under the pillow and you went to sleep, then you got some change under your pillow. So that's where those three come together. But that's very parenthetical and probably not accurate. Anyways, what's the idea? A year is a cycle, right? A year is a cycle. You go through an entire cycle, and then after the year, it starts again. So all the changes, right, of a lifespan, yes, life changes, but within the span of a year, you have kind of a standard process or system of change during the course of the year. So the seasons change and the sun every day moves a little bit and so on and so forth. So when we talk about the process of a year, that is the sun making a full, or say the earth making a full revolution around the sun. And then it comes back to its original starting spot. And every day it changes its position. And based on that, conditions in the world change, right? Your seasons and so on and so forth. Things change. And so there's also an idea of Shana is also related to the word old, because it's pretty consistent and constant, and the sun is always there, and as opposed to the moon, which is always renewing itself, and so on. But for our purposes, it has to do with the word Shana. It changes. Things change during the course of a year. And when you have the full cycle, you've gone through every situation. So an animal may be able, if it has a certain blemish or a certain ailment, a problem, it may survive for a month or two or three or four or five. But that is not indicative that the animal is hale and hearty and that it can survive every condition. If the animal survives for an entire year, that means it went through every standard possible situation, not possible, but basically every situation within the course of a year. It went through the entire cycle. It survived. That's indicative the animal within itself is able to survive. It has its own life force within it. It's not dependent on external circumstances to survive. Okay. Whereas if it survived the summer, but not the winter, that means that it only survived because, let's just say, of the heat of the summer. But once the cold came, couldn't survive anymore. So the animal does not have within itself the ability to live within every situation outside. It is subject to the changes of the world. Okay. And so therefore, when we talk about any animal that is considered alive, as opposed to dying or dead, we look at, can it survive an entire year? If it can survive the whole year, that tells me that it possesses within itself enough life force to live despite the changes going on around it, the standard changes of a year. Okay. Now let's transpose this idea now to a person. Okay. Sometimes you have people who do very, very well for a long time in a certain situation in life. But then when things change, they fall apart. They might go through a difficult experience. They might have to move. They might have to deal with COVID. They might have to deal with this or that and so on. All sorts of different situations. So sometimes you have a person who lives 20, 30, 40 years and, you know, and they're very calm, they're cool, they're nice, they're very pleasant to be around. And then troubles come and you see what they're really made of, right? You could see what they really are. Because the external environment affects them. And when external troubles come, so then things start to go downhill. The person is not so nice anymore. They don't behave so nicely. It's well known, unfortunately, in Europe, before World War II, that Gentiles, who were very, very nice and kind to their Jewish neighbors, once the Nazis spread their vitriol across Europe, as soon as the Nazis walked into town, you know, the Gentile neighbors were very happy to hand over the Jewish people with whom they were so friendly and worked in their houses and went to school with them and so on. And that kind of shows you what was really going on the whole time. Were they ever really nice and friendly, or just the external environment was such that allowed them to be friendly and nice? But once things changed, then their true colors showed through. Unfortunately, this has been the story for Jews throughout history, and we would do well to learn lessons. Doesn't mean we have to be suspicious of everyone, but, you know, just be careful. You know, be careful, because you never know what's really happening over there.
Nobody learned how to be a great sailor on calm seas.
Correct. Correct.
I never heard that.
No one ever learned a great sailor on calm seas. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, as I say, you're only as strong as your weakest link. So basically, within a lifetime of a person developing, what happens is that you go through different situations, trials and tribulations and so on and so forth. And the goal of a lifetime is to perfect yourself to whatever degree possible. That means that you inherently should become an individual who is able to manage on your own without external forces propping you up. That is our goal in life, is to kind of earn our own existence. If I'm living my entire life and everything is fine and I manage because I am being propped up by financial security, by peace and prosperity, by good health, by nice family, et cetera, so then I really have not gotten that far in perfecting and working on myself and developing myself, because I haven't gone through challenges to be able to build myself. And the way that I'm able to perfect myself, to build myself, to make myself truly living, is by going through those difficult situations in life and standing up to them. And even though my support, my external environment has changed, even though what was propping me up before, was helping me before, is not here anymore, I still pull through. I still survive. Okay. And what that does is it develops me and makes me into a more perfect individual who is existing on my own, not because something external is propping me up.
That's the story of Job.
Huh?
That's the story of Job.
That's the story of everyone. Job is just the paradigm. Yeah. Okay. Well, Job is more the paradigm of human suffering in general sense. Job's moral struggle, or his personal struggle, is more to trying to make sense out of a world that doesn't make any sense. As to why does this happen? Why does that happen? And so on and so forth. You know, what I'm focusing on over here is not to explain everything, is just to focus on one point over here of a person within his or her life dealing with trials and tribulations. Okay. But you are correct. I mean, when Job suffered, he did begin to question. You know, whereas previously, when everything was great, he didn't have any questions at all. Okay, so I'll give you an example of this. Rabbi Schwab likes to tell me a story of a person whom he knew, who was a great person, a Torah scholar, a very refined individual whom he knew. And one time, something happened, and he completely blew his top. How are you?
I'm UPS delivery because we didn't know if we could make it, but we're here.
Okay.
And we had UPS outside. So I'm embarrassed.
Okay. You're embarrassed that you're delivering UPS? Okay.
Yes, I think I'm going to it's okay. Sorry.
Okay. Welcome. Yeah, if you want to take something to eat, please help yourself. Okay. So let's move on. Yeah. But we are happy that you're able to make it. So welcome. So, what are you looking for?
This is not the box.
Yeah, we're good. I'm just passing it over. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sorry, everybody.
Okay. Are we good? Okay, so let's move on. So getting back to the story I mentioned. So Rabbi Schwab told me the story of this individual whom he knew, very great Torah scholar, very, very refined individual. One time something happened and he blew his stack. He really like totally lost it. And he told me he was very disturbed that to see a person of that stature, like totally lose it, you know, it takes away an enormous amount of respect you had for the individual. So he didn't know what to do with it. You know, he was struggling, like, how do I process this? So he said he spoke to, someone else with knowledge of the whole situation. And the person told him, this individual is really a great person. And naturally, he's a hot-tempered individual. That's his natural default personality. He said he worked his entire life to remain calm under all circumstances, except for this one. In other words, yes, he built himself his whole life working on staying calm, cool and collected, not losing his temper, not getting upset. He encountered a situation that he was not prepared for, that he had not yet encountered. And he wasn't, you know, he had not overcome his anger to that extent to be able to withstand it. Okay. So everyone has their flaws and so on and so forth. And hopefully everyone, you know, during the course of a lifetime works on their personality flaws and builds slowly, slowly, slowly. But if you ever stop, then there are still, you know, entire frontiers that you haven't dealt with yet, that you haven't encountered, that you haven't overcome yet. And so we go throughout life encountering challenges and difficulties for the purpose of overcoming it and building that into my persona. The more I overcome the challenges, the more it builds me up. We tend to define, again, going back to the Western world, very much today, the Western world defines a good life as a life free of troubles, just happiness and hale and hearty and so on and so forth. When a person becomes ill, when a person, God forbid, has a terminal illness, when a person is, you know, at the end of life, suddenly doctors are very happy to pull plugs. There's this tragic story that just happened in England now with a child who was born with a fatal disease, and she was hooked up to life support. And in England, they weren't able to treat her. And so they wanted to take her off life support so that she would just die. And the parents were Orthodox Jewish parents, from parents. They wanted to take her, I think, to the United States or to Israel for medical treatment, where they, you know, they had some treatment available. Again, her condition was uncurable, but treatment that would keep her alive. And the hospital said, no, we're not doing that. You know, she has a terminal condition, a fatal condition. We're going to pull her off life support and let her die. And they petitioned the courts, and the courts refused to intervene. I think it went all the way to the, I don't know what they call it in England, the Supreme Court, whatever it is, the High Court, and they refused to let the parents make the decision. And last week, this child passed away. Okay, this is the mindset. What? Alta, this is Alta, the child's name is Alta Fixler, I believe is the child's name. Okay, this is the tragedy of the Western mindset, that if we don't see the quality of life over here, if we don't see this person is able to engage in the stuff we think is a worthwhile lifetime, so then the person, you know, shouldn't be living. Or at least we can question whether the person should be living.
Huh? If I could share something.
Just 1 second. What?
Versus for parents. It would seem to me that the medical profession doesn't have the right to make the decision. The parents make the decision.
Right. So in this case, it seems like, I mean, this happens all the time. Doctors, I know personally of people here in Denver. I know someone personally in Denver whose parent had a stroke some years ago and is in and out of the hospital due to various conditions. And he told me a number of times the doctors pressured them, to not give life saving and so on, you know, when the parent is clearly still pretty engaged in life and so on. So, you know, this is one of the reasons why the Talmud says, not to insult anyone, the Talmud says that the best of the doctors goes to Gehenna. And there are a lot of different interpretations for that. But some say the idea is, there are a lot of different approaches. But one idea is that the best of the doctors precisely, in other words, the best doctor is the one tends to get arrogant, starts to play God. And doctors play God all the time. It's unfortunate. To be a good doctor and remain humble is a challenge. Okay. But Mark, hold on a second, because Mrs. Frieda, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, my husband and I filled out halachic medical power of attorneys, and we had them on file. And I was pressured at least once, possibly three times, to bypass that and issue do not resuscitate. And the first time that happened was in the wee hours of the morning, in the emergency room, which was like totally inappropriate because, I was in a very vulnerable position.
Right.
They have no business doing that.
Yeah, you are correct. But they do engage in it regularly. Yes. So Ms. Fridge is pointing out that when her husband Barry passed away recently, so in the weeks and months leading up, she was a number of times, you know, pressured, to sign away some of what they had written in what they call the halachic end of life will. Yeah.
But you also have to take into consideration in England and other countries, they're socialistic, and only to about the age of 60 or 65 do they put out an effort to save anyone, somewhat of an effort. After that, it's kind of...
So it's kind of like Sparta.
They don't have the money. They don't make money to buy new equipment, to buy new this.
Okay, so you're saying there are complications. All right.
Yeah.
Everyone has priorities. Yes. So, you know, it's always wonderful while everyone dances around saying how much we value human life. And therefore, it's important for everyone to vaccinate and wear masks and stay home and so on. At the same time, you know, they're killing people in the nursing homes. So everyone, talking out of two sides. Okay, but I didn't come here today to rail against government. What's that? Yes, we were on Chayesara. So let's get back over here to Chayesara instead of railing against the medical system and the government and so on, which we can save for another time. The bottom line is we're not going to change the government. We can only change ourselves. And the reality is that we do become influenced. In Yiddish, there's an expression, "Vias kristal tzach yidl tzach," which means as it goes with the Christian world, with the world around us, we are inevitably influenced by those attitudes. And so we do have to be on guard to maintain a compass, a moral compass in a world where a lot of values are not lined up with Torah values. So getting back over here. So we start off with the question, how can Rashi say that all of Sarah's years were equally good if seemingly she had a lot of trouble in life? The answer is we have the wrong definition for good. Good doesn't mean everything went exactly the way you plotted it on your little life's map. Good means that I took every moment of my life and I used it to better myself. That is what, if we redefine what a good life means, a life well lived is not how much fun I had, or as the bumper sticker says, whoever has the most toys wins, or something like that. I think that's the bumper sticker I saw. Whoever has the most toys at the end wins. No, that's not the point. You can't take it with you. Okay. The point of life is to better oneself through dealing with life's experiences. And so Hashem puts us through these trials, through these tribulations over and over again in order to give us the opportunity to better ourselves. And that is the idea of tov, of goodness. They're all equal for good, is that yes, Sarah went through a lot of challenges in her life, but she took the opportunity in every moment of her life to build herself, to become a better person. And that is the idea that Rashi's saying, that all years were equal for good. Okay. And that is also, I think, the idea of why the parasha is called Chaye Sarah, the life of Sarah. We're not focusing on her life. We're focusing on her death. Okay. But the idea is as follows. The idea is that if you go through your life trying to have the most fun, or so on and so forth, so then when a person passes away, so like we said, you can't take it with you. What's left? What's left? Nothing. You know, a person leaves a fat bank account behind with a lot of money. They can't take it with them. There's nothing there. Person had a lot of fun and they lived a great life and so on. What do they have afterwards to show for it? To say this was a full life. It was they lived a full life. He played golf every day, and he sat in the restaurant with his friends every Sunday. That's a good life. No. The good life is the life lived overcoming challenges and bettering yourself. So the life of Sarah was 127 years, is that we look back at a point of a person's departure, but we're not focusing on the person's death. We're focusing on the fact that the person made, now that we look back at the entire process of the life, we see this is a life. The life of Sarah was 127 years. All of them were equal for good, as Rashi points out, meaning every moment was used to the utmost to achieve, to grow, to develop. That's a life.
How old was Yitzchak when she died?
Yitzchak would have been 120. She was 127. Yitzchak was 37. Yeah, he was 37.
And where was Lot? Is he gone by then?
I don't know. We're not told when Lot dies. Oh. So I don't know. So okay.
Interesting. We know most of her life when she, let's say, is 65. We don't know much of her life for the first 65 years.
Right. Correct. We don't know much of Avram's life either.
Well, she got more of a life when they were together.
Well, I mean, the Torah tells us at the end of Parashas Noach that Avram married Sarah. And then we're not really told much about their life. The first time we really get into the details is when Avram is 75, which would make Sarah 65. And Hashem says, go to the land to which I will lead you. So, you know, the first time we really get involved in Avram's life, he's 75 years old already. You know, so, but you're correct. You know, we're not told a lot. Yeah, it's important to note the Torah is not a history book. Contrary to, again, common Western perception. It's not a history book. It's not what it is. The Torah is here to create reality. And so anything that's important to the reality and the existence of the world, the spiritual statue world, is discussed in the Torah openly. Now what? The
Torah is here to create reality.
That's what it is. Wow. Yeah, that's what it is. The Talmud says God looked in the Torah and created the world. So it's here to create reality. Okay, that's not my discussion right now. Maybe a different week we will talk about that. So getting back over here. So that is the idea of a life. The life of Sarah's 127 years is that we can look back at a life, that life, even at the point of death. The Talmud says that the wicked, even while they're alive, are considered dead because their life is a non-living life. Whereas a person who passes away but achieved greatness, utilized every moment of life, so that person, even when that person leaves this physical world, that person lives on. Because they've made the most of every moment. They've developed. They've taken the time they had in this world to develop themselves and to build themselves at every moment. And so their life lives on even after they're no longer present in this world. They've created a spiritual reality, for themselves during their lifetime, which lasts past their physical existence here.
They live with mindfulness.
Whereas they live with, okay, more than just mindfulness. They live with achievements, with embracing whatever life throws at them and trying to make the most of it. The wicked person is the one who just tries to suck as much fun and pleasure out of life and is not looking to build anything meaningful or lasting. So then even during the lifetime, they're not really living, because life is about developing. It's about becoming. And if a person is not becoming anything, so then that is what we call a living death. Okay, so that is the idea of what the lessons of the life of Sarah, the life of Sarah, even in her death, it's the life. She had 127 years of life, and that life lives on. It's still there. It doesn't go away. She created something. She became something with every moment. And that's the opportunity we have in our lives as well, to use every moment, to utilize every moment, to become something as well. Okay, if there are any final questions or comments, I'm happy to take them. Yeah.
It says, you know, Sarah's first year was the same as her last year because she lived full years and everything.
Right.
So does that apply today, or can we not take that away today?
What do you mean? As far as what?
Living a full life at 100, making sure you live to 100 two days.
Okay, so this was discussed earlier. You mean in terms of dying on the birthday, passing away on a person's birthday?
Living your whole life as if you were just born.
Oh, you mean at that level of, so okay. So what you're referring to, what you're referring to, what Rashi mentions. I mentioned this earlier before you guys came. That Rashi mentions that when she was 100, she was as pure as when she was 20, in terms of her righteousness and her perfection.
But it's more and than so, just righteousness, because if you're like full, then one day can be as much as nothing, or 100 years can be the same as 1,000. So if you live a full, righteous life, it's like you double the years that you actually live on earth.
Okay, I don't know about doubling, but I think that the idea, yeah, I don't know about doubling, but the idea is that we're given a life to the extent that we use that life, or the moments that we use to build ourselves spiritually, that lives forever. There are sources that say that Olam Haba, the next world, okay, is exactly the parts of life that we actually made something, that we became something, like you say, as opposed to if I'm just sitting around, you know, drinking beer and watching Broncos games all the time, and that's what I did with my entire life. So then what, you know, what did I, I'm not saying you can never watch a Broncos game.
That would be multitasking.
I'm not saying that one can never watch a Broncos game, but the point is, if that is the focus, as I've often said, you know, one of the saddest statements I've ever seen is the person holding up the sign when the Broncos win the Super Bowl, says, "Now I can die." So what was the purpose of my life? To see the Broncos win the Super Bowl. That's it. Is that what it's for? I remember during the World Cup, when Argentina got into the World Cup, they interviewed some guy in a New York bar from Argentina who said, "This is the happiest moment in my life." Okay, you know, fine. So is that what it's about? Again, what did you become? So every moment that a person builds oneself, you became something. So then that lives forever. And if a person just wasted it, frittered it away, then that moment dies, which is one approach when God told Adam that when you eat from the tree, you will die. He didn't die right away. He died 930 years later. Right. So some sources explain that death begins immediately. Every moment that a person does not use to the utmost to build oneself, is that moment dies. So whereas the moments that we utilize to build ourselves, that moment lives forever. Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
This is a true story. My mother told me this. She knew a lady who lived to be well over 100 and hated every minute because she outlived her children, her grandchildren, and so forth. And she was a very lonely woman. She even wore a red shale, wig, whatever, very orthodox. Little bitty thing. I have to tell you her name.
That's fine.
She prayed to die, and then one of her relatives would die. She was well over 100, and she would have killed herself if she could have gotten away with it, because
it's there are situations. I mean, I know there are people like that, you know, who are very old and just waiting to pass, and their families. It does happen. Well, it is tragic when that occurs.
My mother would tell me the story. She'd say, "Cena would pray to die."
Yes,
it was terrible. And of course, I knew her name, but I don't think I ever met her when I was a little kid. But my mother didn't remember that. Her mother, my mother's mother, died very young. And my mother lived to be 81, something. And
So you are correct. There is a, you know, it's not for this. This is a much more sensitive area, which I don't have time to go into, because you are correct. You do have a situation where a person is living and they don't want to live anymore. And it's just a burden for themselves and the family and so on. God forbid, but this happens regularly. It's a very complex situation. There are situations where a person is indeed allowed to refuse life-saving services, and they're allowed to just let themselves, you know, pass away if they are in that much suffering. But at the same time, a person is not allowed to take their own life, nor is anyone else allowed to take their life. In other words, it's God's life to give us, it's God's life to take. That said, a person doesn't always necessarily have to be proactive in prolonging a life of suffering. But ultimately, the bottom line is that, you know, there are these difficult situations, and God is keeping this person here for whatever his reasons are. We don't always know, you know. So it is, you are correct. It's a complex situation, and, you know, each situation in terms of what to do needs to be analyzed on its own.
And of course, this is many years ago, before they had the machines. And
but today it's even more so.
Living, and her family's all dying, and she couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
She was 104 when she finally died.
Okay.
Rabbi?
Yes, go ahead.
I read the article, it was in the IGN from last week, about Alta Fixler.
Right.
That you mentioned.
Right.
And the so-called medical experts said she was in discomfort, and that, you know, there was no hope of her feeling any pleasure or getting through it, you know. And so that's why they made their decision.
Right.
But, you know, that's their thinking.
Yeah, no, I understand. Of course, yeah. There's always a rationale for everything. Yeah, you know, everything can be rationalized. Nazi Germany, I mean, again, it's a far cry from that. You know, everything was rationalized there as well.
Right.
Yeah.
But once somebody goes on...
Oh, I see. Like, hold on a minute.
When someone goes on life support, you know, once they accept that extraordinary means... then you're not allowed to remove it. Is correct. That correct?
Correct. Yeah. Right. Ethel, go ahead.
Okay, again from the commentary.
Yes.
Abraham eulogized his beloved wife by emphasizing the noble traits that had become associated with her name.
Okay. The noble traits that had become associated with her name. That's how he eulogized her. Okay, so you are supporting this approach that she personified these noble traits. Yeah, you know, someone once. I'll just end with this little story. I think it's true. A speaker once said he was talking to someone about what he wants to do with his life. So the fellow said he wants to become a dentist. He said, "That's what you want to do with your life? Like, tell me about what you want." He said, "Oh, I want to become a dentist." So he was obviously trying to help this person figure out something a little more than just what he's going to do for a living. So he went on a whole thing and he said, "So you're going to fill lots of cavities." And he goes through the whole thing. He says, "So I can see right now on your tombstone, you know, they're going to write great dentist, you know, drilled holes, and did root canals and made bridges. He just filled his last cavity." And that was his punchline. So, all right. Let's not. All right. The bottom line is we should not end up like that, but rather we should focus on, like I said, making the most of every moment. All right. Thank you all for coming on Zoom. Thank you for coming in person. And we will be in touch, God willing, for next week. And please spread the word that we are back on in person. I understand some people are still nervous, but as more and more people get even now their third booster shots, you may want to start considering. Ethel, I know you're in Arizona. It's a long walk. But for those who are local, you may want to consider maybe stopping by. We'd love to have you. If not, we'll keep doing it on Zoom. Take care. Be well.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You too.